I have always been one that tries to give people the benefit of the doubt, at least the first time. Pilate, as I've read through the stories of the gospel accounts of Jesus, Pilate is one of those that I've tried to give the benefit of the doubt to. I've always thought, you know, he probably was trying to do the right thing. He was probably trying to get the right outcome and be, you know, be a good judge. Well, unfortunately, as I have sat with Pilate this week, as I have reread the account from the book of John about Pilate's interaction with the Jewish leaders and with Jesus in particular, I have come to the point where I no longer think Pilate is trying to do the right thing. I don't think that Pilate is interested in what justice really means. I think more than the question of what is the truth, I think Pilate's involved with what's going to get me out of here quickly. I don't think that Pilate questioning the Jewish leaders the way he does is trying to get them to get him a straight answer. I think he's playing with them. I mean, after all, you read the historical accounts from Jewish and Roman sources about Pontius Pilate, and well, he didn't like the Jews, and he did several things that it appears he did just to rile them up, just to, as we might say today, stir the pot. And so as I read and have read about Pilate, I think in the past I've missed the disdain he has for the Jews. I think I have overlooked the mockery because I wanted Pilate to do the right thing. Because after all, I've read the book of John, and I know that John says and Jesus says that he speaks the truth. John chapter 3, verses 11 and 32. And I know that Jesus is called the truth. In John chapter 1, verse 14, and in verse 14, chapter 14, verse 6. And so Pilate asks, what is the truth? And I have thought he wanted to know. I also know that one of the things that we have been called to do is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with people. And when we do, when we have those opportunities, people come at the gospel from different frames of reference. They bring their own assumptions. They bring their own previous readings of the scriptures, if they have any. They bring their own history, both pains and joys, to the conversation. And in those moments, we're left questioning, how do we answer their questions? How do we approach their disbelief? How do we challenge the objections and possibly even rejections of the gospel? And I think that in this brief interaction that Jesus has with Pilate, we can see some things that Jesus did and come away with some potential means of honestly and lovingly meeting people where they are. And so we'll turn to John chapter 18, verse 33, and we move from last week. We were looking at Pilate's interaction with the Jewish leaders and Jesus' interaction with the Jewish leaders to this week, Pilate and the beginning of his interactions with Jesus. John writes, he says, Pilate then went back inside to the palace summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you have done?" And Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now, my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. And Jesus answered, "You are right in saying that I am king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me." "What is the truth?" Pilate asked. With this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. And so Jesus has this interaction of questions and answers with Pilate. And I think if we look at the way that Jesus approaches Pilate, we find the ways to approach somebody who may be a little more resistant to the gospel especially. And it begins with finding out where the question comes from. Finding out what is behind the question that is being asked, the doubt that is being posed, the objections. And for Pilate, or for Jesus, it begins with Pilate's question. Pilate asks a simple question, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Now, we would expect a simple yes or no answer from Jesus because, after all, we've read the story and we know the answer is yes. Yes, he is the king of the Jews. But Jesus just kind of lets the question hang there. "Are you the king of the Jews?" Now, if Pilate was to answer that question, unlike you and me, Pilate would answer the question, "No, you're not the king of the Jews. I know you're not the king of the Jews because the Romans are the ones who could give you the authority to call yourself the king of the Jews, and they haven't done that for a couple of decades now, like three or so, since King Herod died, who they allowed to call himself a king. And so, of course, the Romans have not said you can call yourself the king, so you are not the king of the Jews." Now, if Pilate was a thinking man, probably the second thing that came to his mind was, "You're not going to answer this question positively because, well, quite frankly, only somebody with a death wish would say that they were the king of the Jews because the Romans didn't say you are the king of the Jews." And so unless Jesus was really trying to stir up trouble and trying to find his way to death, he would not claim to be the king of the Jews. On the other side of things, I think this is really what the Jews were hoping for. The Jews were hoping that Pilate would ask this kind of question and Jesus would say, "Well, yes, yes, I am the king of the Jews." But Jesus doesn't answer the question. Of course, if you've read the Gospels, you understand what's coming next. Jesus doesn't answer the question. He simply asks another one, which is Jesus' way of doing things. Of course, it wasn't unique to Jesus. Many of the teachers of Jesus' day would do the same thing. You ask a question, and you expect a question in return that says, one, you know the answer to the question, but it also says that you know the greater depth of the story that is being taught. So, you asked, "Did Moses part the Red Sea, and you would expect the answer from the student to be, no, Moses didn't part the Red Sea. God parted the Red Sea when the Israelites were backed up between the Red Sea and Pharaoh's army, and God parted the Red Sea when Moses raised his staff. You answer the question, but you ask a question, and the question shows that you know the answer. I guess it's kind of like an old-time game of Jeopardy. You know, you get the answer, now give me the question. But Jesus, instead of answering Jesus, instead of answering Pilate's question, he asks his own. And his question says, okay, why did you ask me this? Well, what is the purpose? What is the meaning? Where did you get the idea, Pilate, that I am a king? Did somebody else tell you about me? Or did you come up with this on your own, Pilate? In other words, he's asking Pilate, did you hear this from the Jews, or did you gain this understanding from observation and witness? Did somebody tell you to try to get me in trouble, or did you discern this through the evidence? Why are you asking the question? And when we begin to tell people about the gospel of Christ and they begin to have questions or they begin to pose doubts, sometimes the greatest thing we have is the ability to ask questions. Really. Why do you believe that? Well, where did you get that particular concept or that idea? And we ask questions to try to discern where they're coming from with their questions, with their doubts, with their objections. The second thing that we see is that Pilate continues the conversation. Jesus asks a question, trying to figure out why Pilate's asking his first question. And Pilate answers Jesus' first question with his second question. Pilate makes a statement, then he asks, what have you done? And with that, Jesus understands that Pilate isn't forming his own opinion. He's simply mimicking and mocking what he has heard from the Jews. But we have Pilate answering the question for Jesus, and he asks the question, what have you done? In other words, he's looking at Jesus and he's saying, I don't get it. What is it that you have done to make the Jews so mad that they want you dead? Because I don't get them wanting to crucify their king if you claim to be the king. I don't see them thinking that you've caused some sort of rebellion against the Roman government, but something has happened. What is it that you have done? Have you really claimed to be the king? Have you began to try to start a rebellion? Because here's what Pilate knew. Most of the Jews didn't get along with the Romans. And they really didn't like it when Rome crucified their people. So for them to bring Jesus to be crucified, something terrible, something outlandish, something unbelievable had to have happened. But Jesus is beginning to see where Pilate is coming from, and so Jesus, taking Pilate's first question, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus said, well, I'll answer that question. Pilate asks his second question, and Jesus is finally getting around to answering the first one. Because he knows. He knows the basis for Pilate's first question. He knows the starting point isn't his faith, Jewish faith. It's the question of who he really is. And so Jesus answers the question truthfully. Yes. Well, of course, we would expect no less of Jesus. After all, he is the perfect Son of God. He is the spotless Lamb who came to take away the sins of the world. Jesus could do no less than answer truthfully. But he answers the question, yes. Yes, I am the King of the Jews. Except for he doesn't add the word the Jews. He just says, yes, I am the King. And he leaves the question, or he leaves the answer with some ambiguity. He answers it truthfully, but he leaves enough ambiguity there that the questions will keep coming. He leaves enough ambiguity there that Pilate needs to know more. I believe that oftentimes one of the problems we have with trying to share the gospel with people is we find that we've got just a slight bit of interest and we want to unload both barrels, so to speak. And if you've ever shot a double barrel shotgun, you know that's a really bad idea. Both barrels at one time is just dumb. It hurts you, and if you happen to hit whatever you were shooting at, there probably isn't much of it left. The same thing happens when we try to unload on people with the gospel of Jesus Christ. We get worn out and they become deaf to what we have to say. They simply will bow out of the conversation because they aren't able to keep up. They aren't able to process. And sometimes we need to let the ambiguity hang in the air. So Jesus answers, yes, I am a king, but not the kind of king you're thinking of, Pilate. And the ambiguity just hangs for as long as Pilate can let it hang. And then Pilate responds to Jesus' answer by rephrasing his initial question, and maybe actually making a little bit more of a statement than he is a question. And he responds, so you are a king. We're getting somewhere. Pilate thinks he's making progress in this conversation. So you are a king. And I love this. Jesus looks at Pilate. At least I assume this is the way it works in my mind. Pilate is standing on one side, Jesus on the other. Jesus looks at Pilate and he congratulates Pilate on his listening and comprehension skills. Oh, good. I'm glad you're finally catching up. Now, I'm going to answer your second question. Now, you have to remember, Pilate's now asked the third question. Jesus confirms the third question, but now he's going to answer the second question. Jesus might be a little bit behind in the conversation. You see that, right? If you read this just straight through and you don't stop to think about how things are progressing, you miss this flow of events where Pilate asks a question and Jesus doesn't answer it immediately. He waits. And so Pilate has asked his third question and Jesus is going to answer the second one. But here's the thing. I think this is one, to help Pilate understand what he's saying, because Jesus can answer the questions more fully if he's behind a little in the conversation. But I really think what Jesus is doing, especially in light of what comes later in chapter 19 with the second set of interactions between Pilate and the Jews and then Pilate and Jesus, I think Pilate is Jesus is showing Pilate who's really in charge of the conversation. Pilate, you think you're in charge of this trial, but guess what? I'm in charge. And so Pilate had asked in the second question, what have you done? And Jesus says, okay, I'll answer that question now. Well, I was born, and in particular, I was born to tell the truth. I was born to come and to speak only that which is true. And true means that it corresponds to reality, but it also corresponds to the reality of the way God created things. You know, truth isn't just the facts of what is happening. Truth, when you get down to the core of it, is who God is in his very essence. That's what truth is. And Jesus says, I came to bear witness to the truth. And that's what I have done. I simply, Pilate, have told the truth. I have said what is true. I have acknowledged God is God and who I am in relationship to God. I have told the truth. And today we might say something like, we've told the whole truth, or the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And Jesus simply looks and says to Pilate, I've said the truth. And I have called people who hear my voice and seek the truth to live their lives by the truth that they hear and they see, and to obey my voice. He says to Pilate, if you hear what I'm really saying, then if you really want to know the truth, then you will listen to me. And you will do what I have said. I don't think he really believes that Pilate is going to do much of that. And John includes this in his gospel because, if you remember, when we started looking at the Gospel of John, we started not at the beginning, but we started almost at the end in John chapter 20, verses 31 and 32, where John says that I have recorded these things so that you may believe, and in believing you may have eternal life. The truth that Jesus is speaking about, and the truth that Jesus tells Pilate that people will obey if they hear his voice, the same truth is the thing that Jesus says, or John says he has recorded for us about the life of Jesus that can bring us life. And so we have a story that we can tell people that points them to the truth, and if they are willing to listen to the truth, then we call them to obedience to that truth, and believing and obeying according to the Gospel of John will bring life. I like the way the New King James Version Study Bible had their note on this particular verse. It says, if Pilate wanted to know the truth, he would understand. Whoops. Oh. No, I forgot to put it in here. If Pilate wanted to know the truth, he would understand what Jesus was saying. If Pilate really wanted to know the truth, if Pilate really was interested in giving an honest, truthful judgment, he would understand what Jesus was saying. But Pilate didn't. And so Pilate comes back. Whoops, I already moved forward. Pilate has his response to Jesus' truth claim. And we have to understand that when we set the truth out before people and we ask them to hear and obey, we leave things in their hands. We no longer get the privilege of how things are going to go. It's in their court. The ball is in their court. And Pilate responds to Jesus' truth claim. And it is, as I read this truth claim, and I began to consider what it was that Pilate was really saying, that I began to see that Pilate didn't earn the benefit of the doubt. That the Pilate really was playing games. And because here he comes to Jesus and he says, "What is the truth?" And then he leaves the room. He doesn't wait for Jesus to answer. He doesn't wait for Jesus' next question. He says, "What is the truth?" He turns around and he walks out. Exit stage left. And basically, as I was thinking about this, I thought about what he says in verse 10 of chapter 19 when he says, "Do you refuse to speak to me? Do you not realize that I have the power either to free you or to crucify you?" You see, Pilate still thinks that he's in charge. And Pilate is not really interested in the truth. Pilate could care less what the truth was. He was much more concerned with expediency than he was the truth. In fact, I really wonder if Pilate wasn't wanting to get home and get there before the Easter hamburger. Because, well, you read the Roman and the Jewish historians, what you find is that Pilate, well, killing one more Jew wasn't a problem for Pilate. He was known for doing a lot of things to stir up problems. He put the Roman standards for a brief period of time in the temple. He got talked down to, verbally abused by Tiberius because he did, and told that he had to take them out. He will kill some Samaritans because they think they're going up to dig up the bones of Moses, and he just doesn't want them to do that. Or he wants to kill some Samaritans, I'm not sure which. Historians aren't quite settled on it either. But there were several times when Pilate got in trouble, to put it nicely. He got in trouble for the way he treated the Jews. And so Pilate's just looking for another way to insult the Jews. He's just looking for another way to belittle, to humiliate, to irritate the Jews. And so he calls Jesus the King of the Jews. In fact, later they'll ask him, "Could you say, instead of he is the King of the Jews, that he said he was the King of the Jews?" And Pilate will say, "No, I wrote what I wrote, and that's what I meant to say." Why? Because he believed it? No, but because it made the Jews mad. It irritated the Jews, and Pilate is just irritating the Jews. So he walks out on Jesus before he can tell him the truth. Now, we know what the truth is. We've looked at the book of John. We know that the truth is the standard by which we were all created to live. And as I was sitting there thinking about this week, the picture of the NASCAR cutout thing that they put over top of the cars to make sure that they meet the standard came into my mind. And the fact that when a NASCAR driver, if they win the race, or two, if somebody thinks they're cheating, they have this team of engineers that go in and they will tear the car down from top to bottom and inspect every stinking little piece to make sure it matches the standards. Well, you and I, we were created for a standard. The standard is what God created, and God said the way that the standard is to work in the beginning. Jesus lived up to that standard perfectly, completely, from top to bottom, inside, outside, his whole life. Pilate isn't interested in knowing the truth. And so Pilate, in a bit of mockery, comes out to the Jews and he says, "What do you want me to do with the King of the Jews? And oh, by the way, you have this practice that I release for you somebody on Passover. Who would you like me to release? How about I give you the King of the Jews?" Now, the question was asked because most likely the Jews were going to ask for a high-profile religious political figure. The King of the Jews. That's who they would ask for, right? No. No, in stark irony, the Jews look at Caesar and will find out, or Pilate, and will find out in chapter 19 that they answer Pilate, "We have no king but Caesar." That should set off a lot of alarm bells for those of you who know the Jewish history, because the Jews weren't supposed to have any king but God. And if when they did ask for a king, they were only supposed to have a Jewish king over them. And now they claim, "We have no king but this Roman Caesar." But here they ask for Barabbas. Now John tells us that Barabbas was a robber. If you look at the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew calls him a notorious criminal. And if you read Mark and Luke, Mark tells us that he had been imprisoned for insurrection and murder. In other words, Barabbas was in prison because he had tried to lead a rebellion and he killed people in the process. And when we say he killed people in the process, it probably means that he killed some Romans, probably Roman soldiers. And then he took some stuff that didn't belong to him. That's probably what John means when he calls him a robber, is that he simply took the spoils when he shouldn't have. Mark and Luke, they tell us that the notorious nature of this criminal was, well, he was doing something that might get the Jews to lose their nation and the religious leaders to lose their power, but yet they wanted Jesus, who wasn't doing any of that, to die on the cross because that's what they were afraid he would do for them. You see, there's a lot of irony in this. But people will throw up a lot of objections. Some of them may have some truth. A lot of them don't. They simply are things that people are repeating that they think they've heard others say. But we, like Jesus, we can answer their questions only when we understand what their questions really are. And oftentimes, the best way to answer their questions are with deeper, more probing questions. And as I was reading this, I began to think about Jesus' question, or Pilate's questions, and Jesus' answers, and I began to think these questions sound familiar. Because I think they're a lot like the questions we ask when somebody comes to be baptized. Questions like, do you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God? Do you want to make him the Lord and master of your life? And by Lord, it means master or king. Do you wish to make him the king of your life? Do you believe that he lived a perfect life? That he died and he rose again to pay the price for your sins? You see, I think that those questions, they sound a lot like the questions that are being asked by Pilate and by Jesus. And now I want to ask you one more question. And the question is probably the most important question that you will ever answer. And that is the question, what will you do with the King, not just of the Jews, but of the universe? Will you call him the Lord of your life and submit yourself to the truth of the way he calls us to live? Or will you turn around like Pilate and say, what is the truth? Let's stand as we sing together this morning.